I just wanted to talk to Heather Elliott and Cindy Kemp. I'm talking to them about World's a Wine Bomb. And I want to start with Heather because Heather was the first person that got into this project. Now, I actually have a terrible memory about how things start. Maybe I should start out by saying that I ran into Wine Bomb back in 1991. Which is a while ago for Heather. But I'm an Army reservist, and I was mobilized for a war, a Desert Storm. And I was in the United Arab Emirates in a hospital unit. And there was a shelf of books. One of the books, I think, was a collection called The Best of Stanley Weinbaum. And somebody had put together the stories, some of the planetary stories, which is what we've used. We'll talk about that in a minute. But then it had some other of his stories that have a fantasy flair to them. And I read the stories, and I was like really taken with just his style, and I really enjoyed it, even though it's from the 1930s and those the 1990s, 60 years later. And I actually wrote my very first short story after that because I had all kinds of time on my hands during the war. Anyway, so I wrote my first short story imitating the style of Weinbaum, and then I lost that story years ago. I don't know what ever happened to it. But so that's something that I knew from way back then that I liked him. And then somehow this got over to Heather. So Heather, how was it that we got started on this? I don't even remember exactly.
Well, fortunately, I do remember. We were at Railmakers 2016. I think that was my first year there. Okay. And I'm not sure exactly how the topic came up, but we were talking about, you probably asked me what I was writing. And I have been doing radio drama scripts adapting from public domain short stories.
Right.
And that sort of jiggled something in your memory. And you're like, oh, hey, how about we, you know, take a look at this and see if it's something you'd like to help me with.
So what other short stories had you worked with before for radio dramas?
For the dramas, I've actually taken some lesser known to Alcott and Jules Verne. I've done The Wind in the Willows. And then the radio station I work with focuses primarily on detective mystery shows.
Okay.
So I've done, I think I'm on my third season with a pair of detectives. So it's been a lot of fun.
Not the speculative fiction so much, but the detective.
No. I did a couple science fiction ones. Those were fun, but I've never really done much science fiction, so it was neat. One of my favorite things with Weinbaum was the historical feel.
Yeah.
I know that wasn't intended, but I like it.
Right. So it was 2016 that you told me you were doing this thing, making radio dramas. Are you still doing that? Is that still a part of your
life?
Yes,
I am.
Oh, okay. And what's the radio station you do that for?
It is KSVR FM in Mount Vernon, Washington.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's kind of amazing. So you told me that you did this. I remember you refreshed my memory a little bit. And I said, okay, I know somebody, Stanley Weinbaum. Is this stuff in public domain? I wasn't sure if it was or was not. And how did you find his works?
I found it on Project Gutenberg.
Okay. Generally lists public domain stuff, right? So the thing with Weinbaum, he wrote in 1931, but he passed away that same year, or 30 and 31. All of her stories were written within like a 2-year period. Mm-hmm. And then he died of lung cancer, and I think he was only 33 years old. He was a pretty young guy. But anyway, because he died all the way back then, you know, 1931 plus 70, his stuff went in the public domain in 2001. And I imagine that there's some other people like him. But some of the science fiction writers that I liked, you know, lived longer, good for them, than Stanley Weinbaum. Mm-hmm. So his stuff entered the public domain earlier. So
a lot of science fiction did not end up in public domain. Or excuse me, was not actually copywritten.
Oh, okay. So I found that to be true. I was looking for covers. And I don't know that you have seen the cover of this book, either of you. But the front cover was done by America Campana Finley. She did the art, but the back cover, I used a piece of public domain artwork from one of the science fiction magazines of the 50s. But this particular piece of artwork was never copyrighted. And in fact, I think the magazine doesn't even exist anymore. So it's in the public domain. Anyway, so that's one of the things I want to talk about with this post is recommend to people if they're looking for story ideas in science fiction and are trying to get inspired by it. Not only do I want to promote what we're doing, I want to mention that maybe looking in the public domain is a good idea. Would you happen to know which stories, what kind of fiction was written back in the 20s?
I only know what I know. So I do know that there was a lot of crime fiction.
Okay.
Because that's mostly what I look at for the radio dramas that I've done. Police. Yeah, I can't think of much else.
Cindy, have you read any really, you know, I guess we'd call it old fiction, like Edgar Rice Burroughs or any, are you familiar with that kind of stuff?
Oh, way further back than that, but not in the era you're talking about. I've read some fiction that was written in the 1700s,
okay,
including some rapier manuals. That was weird.
Well, I mentioned that's in the public domain, so right.
Probably.
Yeah, nobody's renewed the copyright on that. Well, I think that Frank Baum wrote in the 20s, if I remember right, the original publication of The Wizard of Oz was prior to the 1930s. So I think that Wizard of Oz is in public domain now. And I'm not sure what the status is of Edgar Rice Burroughs. I think some of Edgar Rice Burroughs is in the public domain. In fact, I think that we see in some of the movies that come out on a regular basis, some of the stuff that they go to is public domain. It's just easier. Or it's like, for example, Frankenstein. What's some other examples? Help me out here, brainstorm. What are some of the ones that are in public domain in the speculative?
Little Women.
Little
Women. Oh, sorry.
That's not speculative fiction, but yeah, it is. No, it is true, though. But no, Little Women, yeah. and Jane Austen, and they keep redoing Jane Austen. But also, we were talking about, you know, the Jules Verne stuff, of course.
Yeah.
But H.G. Wells, War of the Worlds, that stuff is in the public domain now.
When was Lovecraft?
Lovecraft should be in the public domain or some of it, right? But so what happens with the public domain is that when you, if you alter it or whatever, it's considered to be a new work. And so that was my idea to alter it. And that was, I started that with Heather and continued it with Cindy. So do you remember what my idea was to alter the speculative fiction there, Heather?
To update the science a little bit based on what we know now of our solar system and bring a little bit more of a rounded and Christian perspective, having that mindset continue on.
Right. So one of the things that I found with Weinbaum is he had a lot of references to God, but I think it was just normal. I think if you try to figure out what Weinbaum believed from reading his works, I think you probably conclude he's an atheist, but he doesn't, of course, actually say. So we did amplify a bit some of the references, but he made a lot of references to the Bible, actually. It just must have been part of the culture at the time. Well, just simple things like referencing a minister. One of the stories, guy says he's going to get married, and they talk about a minister. You know, that kind of, and stuff like that. But he makes other, I'm trying to think, like even some of the expressions. Anyway, so he made certain references to the Bible and just nothing necessarily serious. So, Cindy, do you remember what I was saying about the TRAPPIST system and how I wanted to use that?
Yeah, that the a red dwarf star with a whole passel of planets in the Goldilocks zone. We were going to move Weinbaum stories into that system and relabel them so that we could get the science to cooperate.
Yeah, and we didn't stick with the original red dwarf. Do you remember why that was?
Yeah, I did. I did some digging on the stellar cartography and found that red dwarf stars produce almost no blue and no violet light, which meant that there wouldn't be anything interesting for the plants to do photosynthesis with, and that doesn't give you much of an ecosystem. So I did a little further digging, found an orange dwarf star would be a reasonable compromise. It still had a fairly large Goldilocks zone and produced enough of the high energy photons that you could get photosynthesis to work. When we calculated out all the orbit locations for all the different planets, we did have to tweak Bode's law a bit to get it to work, but we got them all in there.
You know, I was more worried about than photosynthesis working. I was more worried about changing all the colors. Every single color in the story would have had to have been changed if it was a red dwarf, because nothing would look the same. And I'm like, oh, I do not want to change all the colors and all the story. So let's not do that. Let's change the color of the sun a little bit. And at first I thought about having them go directly to the TRAPPIST system because it has multiple inhabited worlds. And that's one of the things that Weinbaum did in the 1930s. The solar system wasn't very well known, and he imagined that planets of the solar system had inhabited worlds, many of them inhabitable at different levels. So his imagination was all within a single planetary system. And obviously that's not true of our planetary system. So my thought was, or the idea was that, hey, let's try to make this like realistic, that maybe there is a place out there where these worlds could really exist. And that's one of the things that science fiction has, with this old fashioned feel to it, yet nonetheless maybe this could have actually happened somewhere or could be out there some other star. So I came up, with a kind of lame-o device. And do you remember what that was, Cindy? I think it's lame, but I just went with it.
You had aliens who dropped in to Earth at the time of various disasters and rescued people out of the disasters, but then ported all those people over to the new system and populated the world there.
Right. So the disaster, so that nobody would know but anybody was missing, this right. kind of thing. And there would be like, and all of a sudden these people up here in the other world, however far away it is, and they, because I'd never defined how far it is, but it's got to be far enough away that a radio message would not have reached Earth from here to there between the time. Weinbaum stories, even though they have a 1930s feel to them, they're set in between the dates. The first earliest date he mentions is like the 2030s, and then he goes all the way into the 2100s. Mm-hmm. So that winds up being in our the future from now. But nonetheless, I mean, we've sent radio messages out. So Weinbaum star system, if this was too weird to imagine this really happened, it'd have to be at least a couple hundred light years away. All right. So when we were first doing the editing, Heather, I don't remember what year we started doing it. Do you remember when it was? Right away? Was it in 2016? Oh,
I think so. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I started it pretty close to when we first talked.
Oh, you got your notes there?
I do. I'm not sure if I printed the entire email, if I just copy and pasted the relevant information.
Oh, wow. I know you highlighted a bunch of things that you were concerned with, and that's what we did at first.
Yeah, I had gone through and highlighted and made a note, for myself of every single thing historically or technology that we would need to address.
Right.
References to religion, to countries, to, all kinds of slang, words that were common then that we weren't sure if we wanted to use now because meanings have changed.
Right.
And then just started there. Identifying everything that would need to be looked at in some way or another. And then pick something like, all right, let's work on, making sure the planet system is what we want. Okay, let's decide what of the 30s do we want, how much of that 30s scale do we want to carry over? What are we going to keep out?
Right. And I remember that it's terrible how little I remember, but you're also going to attending university classes, right? In addition to your job. Is that correct?
I'm still hoping to continue with linguistics.
Linguistics, okay. That's yep. what you're doing. Okay, linguistics. Very interesting, too, by the way. So anyway, but I remember you were bogged down, and I wasn't necessarily fast to getting things done either. So this dragged out as a project. And then I asked Cindy to help us, finish up. So mm-hmm. Cindy, since both of you have better memories than I do, do you recall what it was exactly we did between the two of us to finish up the project?
It was the fall of 2019. You'd asked me if I could help out with Worlds of Weinbaum and getting the ecology and the science part of the science fiction correct.
Yeah.
And then also do some general editing to tidy up wordsmithing issues and characterization, stuff of that sort.
Yeah. One of the things we did is we changed, like you already mentioned, the star, but we changed some of the races and names of people, too, in some cases, to make it a little more multinational. Because I don't think Weinbaum maybe didn't intend to be racist or anything, but all the characters are white people, so we, mm-hmm. Included a few non-white people. And then he had kind of two minds, I think. Well, in my opinion, of two minds about how he portrayed women. Sometimes I thought, in my opinion, he portrayed women pretty well. But other times he portrayed women as being really stupid, doing really stupid things. So
yeah, that was one of the ones we cut out completely.
Yeah. Well, we did the worst one. Well, there's one story that was too far gone to fix. But then we fixed some other ones and managed mm-hmm. to get it all together. But his works are in the public domain. I think that now our version is our own version and mm-hmm. copyrighted by us, assuming I understand the copyright law correctly. So I think at least our changes are copyrighted. Mm-hmm. Somebody can't use our particular changes without our permission. Anyway, so what are your thoughts about the stories, Cindy? Because I know that you've read them in their latest version. Do you have a particular story you like best, a story you like least?
The one that I like the least is the one that we cut entirely, the one on Pluto.
Yeah, right. The red peril. right? Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, Ben Perry.
Ben Perry, that's it, yeah. That was unsalvageable, yeah.
that just failed the whole disbelief suspension thing. The Venus story was kind of interesting.
Which is Parasite Planet, it's the name of the story.
Right. The one that where everything was so fogged you couldn't see very far, and the scientist cut herself loose, or got cut loose and disappeared.
Yeah, yeah, that was the Planet of Doubt was the name of the story, but it was set on, we call it Kalis, and it was, but that's Uranus, basically. Mm-hmm. So just to mention it to everybody, we flip the names whenever possible from Latin to Greek and Greek to Latin. Most of the time, most of the names of planets are Latin, so we flipped them to Greek. But in a few cases, that wasn't possible because they're already Greek, and or we made so we made other names. And I think Heather was the one that was coming up with some of these names, isn't that right, Heather?
I might have. No, I don't remember.
Or was it
Cindy?
I think
you might have.
I did some of them, but I remember that we got to the moons of Jupiter, and I don't think that I did that. One of the you two did that.
No, it wasn't me. All the names were set. You know, we changed a couple of character names because they had names that were perfectly acceptable in 1930 and somewhat infelicitous in the modern era.
Yeah, right.
I know that I did give you a list of every single location and every single character. So
I think you did, Heather. That's funny that you're getting senile like me. But no, we had the we did the names. No, you did that. You gave me the names of the planets. I mean, so we switched. So all of them are all the four moons are different anyway. But I have a chart and a list that I created of these. And I even talked about making a prequel for it that would talk about people transferring from one world to another. And I think Cindy contributed a story to that. I'm not sure if I want to go forward with it because it doesn't have the same flavor as the stories themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I'm not sure. I'm trying to make up my mind about that, Cindy. But one of the things that he chose is intelligent alien life. He was considered the first writer, science fiction writer, to realistically write intelligent aliens. But that really you can see where he got them from because he also wrote foreigners interacting like space colonialism. There's the Americans and the Germans and French and all these different people from different places, the Dutch. And we changed, I think, that Dutch to Belgians, didn't we? Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm forgetting.
And because of the disasters that we were able to come up with in the operative time frame.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's why we did that. Anyway, so we changed a number of different nationalities around. But Weinbaum, as he had the different international people interact differently, he just kind of like took, it looked like to me, he took the aliens and projected them so that they're even more foreign than any of the foreign people. And it seems like where he got this idea that aliens would still be logical and make sense. They wouldn't necessarily be monsters or human analogs, but they would still be alien. And one of the things I guess I like is that there's this almost the feel of like the polar exploration days that was going on in the 30s and the early pioneering days of aircraft that people, you know, that we're talking about private enterprise, mostly exploration. Or even a paid for expedition, but it's like, you know, done by, it's not, there's no government, there's no military characters in the story.
Yeah.
They're all regular people out there just trying to make a living.
They're explorers for a university, a lot of them.
Right. There was a couple stories where they're under a grant from the university, but then there are people that are just like in the Parasite planet, for example, Ham Hammond, he is just collecting something on the planet to sell that's worth money back on Earth. And then also on the planet Colossus, the story set there, they're doing the same thing. The Tim and Diane, I think, are the husband and wife team. And Weinbaum also wrote romance stories. So there's always like a love interest. Not always, but mostly most of the stories have a love interest in them. The stories on Mars don't have love interests. Those ones are, we call them Aries stories, right? There's no love interest. Well, sort of. Right. They have a memory of love. You know, there's like a false vision of this creature creates a vision of their love interest, but there's no love interest. But the rest of them, I think all the rest of the stories do have a love interest of some kind, which is okay. I mean, I can live with it. Anyway, so we got it finished and we got it put together, this collection. Do either of you have ideas about who might really be interested in these kinds of stories or who do you think these would appeal to?
I think a Pulp Fiction crowd would be interested in these. There are a group of writers that I know who are writing neo-pulp, and a lot of the stories have the same kind of feel to them. Not necessarily science fiction older, more antique kind of vintage feel to it.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Heather?
I don't know. I'd probably say the same. I know I did a couple of, for my, the radio dramas, I did a couple that were Pulp Fiction, and they do have that feel. They're fun to read. You know, they're that little bit older with the history in it. If you appreciate that, then you'd enjoy it.
I think one of the things too, Heather, is that back in the 30s, when people were listening to stories, that's exactly what they did. They listened to stories. There were radio dramas, but there weren't. I mean, also, obviously, that people had written literature. But I think some of this, I think sometimes some of the conventions of radio, maybe we can even see it in the dialogue in Worlds of, in Wine Bomb stories in Worlds of Wine. Do you, would you agree with that? Or?
Yeah. One of the things that I've noticed is most indicative of something like that is the amount of exposition that you find in dialogue.
Right.
There's a lot of exclamations. There's a lot of restating things.
The dialogue is, you could almost make this into a radio drama, or it has that kind of feel to it. And some of the...
Yes, it would be very easy to do. Very easy.
It would be. We should do it. No. I think we're going to make an audiobook version of it, or I want to make an audiobook version at some point. This is the thing. This is one of the projects I did kind of as a passion project, because I like Weinbaum stories so much and I think they're so good. But I'm really not quite sure what to do with it, what we should do next or how to follow up with it. So this is your one science fiction project there, Heather, though even science fiction is not your thing. Why'd you come to Realmmakers if you're not into science fiction, or what are you into?
I have always loved history, but I've discovered that history, like if I was to do just plain old historical fiction, is far too limited for me. I like the, adding a fantasy flair to it.
So would you ever be up for doing something like this again, like going over the public domain for like Oz or something like that and trying to adapt stories, or not?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'd love to. I love public, public domain is amazing. There's so many great stories that no one knows about.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to ask you to look for some good science fiction that's in the public domain. Stuff like the Barsoom series by Edgar Rice Burroughs. I don't know when he wrote those. They were pretty early. So unless you got homework now, go look and see.
All right.
But I know Oz, I shouldn't say I know, but I'm pretty sure that Oz is in the public domain now. Now, not the movie. The movie is not in public domain because the movie...
I don't think so.
Yeah, they adapted. The movie adapted things in the book. Like, for example, in the book, it was Silver Slippers, and they made it Ruby Slippers. And the movie is, because they've renewed the copyright on that continuously, I think, as far as I know.
That sounds familiar. So I know... I know someone else that was looking into Oz, so there might be a better chance on books that are not the first one, like the rest of the series, so much the one that we know as the movie.
I think Frank Baum, if I remember right, wrote 12 Oz books, and then there were a bunch of other people that wrote Oz books as well. So there's over 100, I think, Oz books, and I don't know what the status of all are. Yeah, they were hugely popular at one time, but... Mm-hmm. So I think there's maybe something to do there if somebody's interested in doing that, is listening to this podcast, because that's what we're going to make out of this, a podcast. If somebody's interested in that, that's something to pursue. I think there's other old science fiction, H.G. Wells. So they did The Island of Dr. Moreau as a movie some years ago. It was kind of a interesting movie, and War of the Worlds has been done more than once. But that is in the public domain. The Jules Verne is in public domain. And there's a number of other things that are Dracula, the original Dracula. So to take one of those stories and just adapt it to make some change to it, that is actually a legit thing to do. That's what public domain works allow. Either of you ever read the Barsoom series, John Carter? Did you see the terrible John Carter movie?
By chance? No, but I want to.
I've seen the movie.
It's awful. It's awful. I thought it was awful.
It was kind of scary. really? Kind of way. Okay.
So it had some good moments, but overall it's just like, I can't believe they did that. It had some good moments. I'll give it that. Anyway, thank you for coming and talking to me. But I appreciate your time and hope you both have a great evening. So goodbye. Talk to you later and have a good evening. Say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.